But first, to my very first guest of the evening. I've met some remarkable people in the Late Show studio over the years, but this lady is quite remarkable. For 50 years, Helga Gerhardy has lived with the most horrific memories of a flight from the Russian army in the winter of 1944-45. She'd never been able to talk about her time as a refugee, but after years of gentle encouragement by her family, she now recounts the story of a Swiss lady trapped in Hitler's Germany in her autobiography simply called Helga. It is a remarkable book. She's a remarkable lady, as you'll find out as I introduce her. Helga, a very good evening to you.
Good evening, Bob.
And welcome to the programme. Let's begin at the beginning, if we may. You're a Swiss lady living with your family in Germany before the war, yeah?
That's right, yes.
What part of Germany?
I lived in Königsberg, the capital of East Prussia, but I wasn't born there. I was really born in Tilsit, the border town with Lithuania. But I was only 4 or 5 years old when we moved. My parents felt, having four children, we ought to live in a bigger town, really, to help with our education.
Mm.
But my father remained. My father had a dairy in Tilsit, and later on bought two more, even one in Lithuania. So he had to travel a lot, and only came home for weekends.
So he retained his Swiss nationality.
Oh, he always retained his Swiss nationality.
So
yes.
You grew up in during the rise of Hitler.
Oh yes.
In Germany before the war. Indeed, when you were 14, you had an encounter. You actually met Hitler, didn't you?
Yes,
tell
yes,
me about
I did.
That. Tell me about that.
Well, it was an accident. I didn't make an appointment.
You were 14, yes?
Yes, I was 14 years old. Hitler had the habit of going to different towns. In the 1938, he came to Königsberg. He visited Königsberg. He arrived by train, and then, of course, by car, he went through the town. I had a piano lesson on that day, and I didn't want to skip it, because if I did, I would have a double one the next week, and I didn't like that. So after I finished my piano lesson, I came out. There was a woman on the corner selling some violets, and I thought, well, with my father coming home for the weekend, I might as well get a little bunch of violets. So I bought those. Well, there were crowds of people lining the road, but I had to cross the main road because there were no trams going, and I had to go home. Well, I had to run home. I decided to cross this main road, but I had to squeeze through the people. And I kept on waiting and wondering, well, should I chance it to get across this empty road or not? Eventually,
These were the crowds lining the route
yes,
to see Hitler.
Yes, they were. And in the front were the Hitler youth, the young boys and girls standing there. But I squeezed through and I thought, right, I'm going to run. And I was only halfway across the road when Hitler came around the corner in an open car, and he was standing there. And I just stopped and I stood there. And one of the SS men approached me and he said, you can give the Führer those flowers. I said, well, they're not really for the Führer. I said, they're for my father. But I only whispered it because I was so frightened.
Yes.
And he just pulled me along to the car, and Hitler bent down. My arm just came up and the flowers went to him. And then he said, but you're not in uniform. Don't you belong to the Hitler Youth? I said, no, my father is Swiss. But the people were screaming and shouting so much that I don't think he really heard it. But he looked at me, and I think, and I will never forget that look. He had no warmth in his eyes. He just sort of stared, and he smiled, but it was a set smile. There was no warmth in it. But the people adored him, and they shouted and they screamed. Mm. Anyway, the SS man just pulled me away, and he said, all right, you can cross the road now. So I ran home.
Did you tell your parents what had happened?
Oh, I did, yes. But my father was rather cross, because not only was I allowed to join the Hitler Youth, but he didn't really like me to say Heil Hitler, which was the greeting. And he said, well, I do hope nobody has seen this and taken a photograph of you, and maybe this will come into the paper. We are neutral, you see, and we don't want to make any trouble and so on. But no, it wasn't in the paper, so that was all right. But all my school friends, you know, they were terribly jealous, because they adored Hitler, and they would have liked to give him some flowers, or at least meet him.
You see, when you say that, Helga, all your school friends adored Hitler, the crowds in your town when he was visiting in 1938, were going mad and screaming and shouting for this man, and they adored him. Looking back now at this evil man, and yet he inspired the youth of that town and the people of that town so much. Why?
The reason was Germany was had a lot of unemployment, and there was a great deal of poverty. And when Hitler came to power, he gave the people work. He built the Autobahn, and he gave them work. But of course, what people didn't know was that he took the money from the Jews. They didn't realize that, the masses of them. But by having work, Germany prospered.
Was there a Jewish population in the town where you lived?
No, we didn't have a big population, but we did have two girls in my class. They were Jewish. And when Hitler came to power, they suddenly disappeared. And I wanted to find out what happened to one of them, because I knew where she lived. So I took my bike and cycled round there, and I was terribly shocked to realize what had happened. The parents had a drapery shop, and that was all smashed up, and part of the old cloth and hats, they were all laying outside on the road. And the flat where they lived above, that was all broken, the windows were broken. And when I asked one of the neighbors, they said, "Oh, that was the SS. You better go home, don't ask questions." And when I told my parents where I had been, they were very cross and told me not to go to near the place again and just keep quiet. The only other thing I remember was we had a very big store in the town called Stern, and I know they were Jewish, and although I was forbidden to go and have a look, I'm afraid I was rather courageous, I did go and have a look, and that was all destroyed, smashed up. And
did you realise, even at that young age or during the war, what was happening to the Jewish people of Germany? Did the German people realize what was happening?
I think they must have realized, because there were no Jewish people actually left. I mean, you didn't have anybody at school who was Jewish. You didn't have we didn't have very many in the town in any case, but the Jews weren't allowed to walk about as ordinary people. They had a star on their sewn on to their coat, so everybody could realize that they were Jewish.
And your father, you said, was totally, being a Swiss living in Germany, having a business in Germany, was totally against Hitler and the Nazis and so on.
Well, he just kept quiet. He felt that was the best way to do.
My guest is Helga Gerhardy. We're discussing a remarkable book. It's simply called Helga, and it's the story of her life. Let's move you on through the war now. You lived in the same town through the war, Helga?
Yes. We lived, when the war started, we knew actually that it would start, because, you see, we lived so near Poland, and the armies sort of collected in the town.
Well, they came through the town to invade Poland.
Yes. And being a very big town, we had lots of barracks there, and they were suddenly full of soldiers and officers, and then the war started against Poland. Well, that was fine. We were concerned about that because it was close to us, but that was very quickly finished. But then when the war came in the west against France and so on, that was a long way away. And except for food rationing and so on, we didn't even get any bombing at first, because it was too far for the Americans and for the English to come to the east, to Königsberg, to bomb us. But when the war against Russia started, now that was at our front door, we were more concerned again about that.
Well, let's move you on quickly to the end of the war, to the time when the Russian army was approaching the part of Germany where you were living. It's the end of what, 44, the beginning of 45?
Well, they did the big offensive, the Russians, actually, in January 45.
Now, this is where, it's a remarkable story, this is where it becomes even more remarkable. You walked 350 miles, yes?
That's right. And it was very cold. It was the winter, one of the worst winters we had in the East.
You were fleeing from the Russians?
Yes. Well, I was a medical student, and whilst I was in the end of December, one of my duties was to be at the station, and the trains used to arrive, and there were only cattle trucks where the wounded were just thrown in. And Most of them were dead, and I had to sort them out. I was only 18.
These were the German soldiers returning from the Russian front, if you will. Yeah.
But the ones that were alive started to tell us what the Russian army was like, because they had reconquered parts which had been occupied by the Russians. Mm. And they started to tell us about the terrible atrocities which the Russians did against the German civilian population. And they warned us young nurses and said we ought to try and get out. So we left. I left on my own because at that particular moment all my family were scattered, which was unfortunate. And it was 10, 15 degrees below zero, and we just walked in a track.
Did you know where you were going?
Well, to the west, that's all you sort of
thought. You just kept going west?
Yes, but I had a little map, and we were told occasionally by soldiers we met how far the Russians were and where we shouldn't go, because they gradually started to encircle us, and the only way we could get out was to get over what's called the Huff, which was frozen. And I think that was the worst part.
It's difficult for me to imagine such tremendous hardship and difficulties that must have ensued on that journey. Your mother apparently gave you a phial of cyanide.
Yes. And already before, she was always afraid that something might happen, that the Russians would suddenly come so quickly that we wouldn't be able to be in contact anymore. You see, we never got the proper news on the radio. Mm. We were only allowed to listen to German news, and that was always, oh, we're holding the Russians back, which of course wasn't true. So she gave me some cyanide. It was only a small little phile, and I wore it round my neck on a little ribbon.
Would you have taken it?
Yes,
if the Russians had caught up with you?
Yes, I would.
You would?
Yes, I would, because I wrote in my book, there's one chapter, it's called The Village of Hell. I won't talk about it, because I still find it very difficult to talk about it, but anybody reading that will understand that I was prepared to take that if any Russian had got near me.
Helga, it's a long time ago. Since then, of course, you settled here in England, you had a family. But the remarkable thing was, you never spoke to your family about any of this, did you?
No, I would always only say I was a refugee and we lost everything, so we had to start again after the war. Because I didn't want to go through it again, because I felt I pushed it into the back of my mind.
Yes.
Then when they persuaded me that I ought to write about it, I thought, well, all right, I write, but I won't show it to them. But in the end, I did. But whilst I was writing, I got cold again, and I got hungry again.
What, all the physical things returned to you?
Yes.
Even after 50 years?
Well, you don't forget that. It was so horrible. And I think the hunger wasn't really the worst, because I never realised that after a time, the hunger pangs go away. You don't feel hungry anymore, but you become weaker and weaker.
This remarkable journey that you undertook in the winter of 44, 45, 350 miles on foot with a group of other refugees, how long did it take you?
Oh, about 6 weeks. But towards the end, I jumped on a train. So I did get...
And where did you end up? Where did you finish?
I ended up in Greifswald, which is still on the Baltic, because we had friends there. We always said if we could get out, if anything ever happened, that's where we would try and meet.
So by this time, Helga, we're moving on very quickly. It is a remarkable story. By this time, you've lost touch with all your family.
Oh, yes, I was alone all that time.
You didn't know where your family were, if they were safe?
No, I had no idea.
After the war, the war is now over, what happened to you then? Where did you settle?
Well, I met my mother already in the Greifswald, but I was still afraid that the Russians would come even to Greifswald, so we decided to make our way to Hamburg, because logically we thought the English wouldn't let the Russians have Hamburg, because they needed a harbour to get all their stuff over to Germany, didn't they?
And you trusted the English more than you did the Russians?
Oh, well, the people in the West never moved when the Allied armies came. They stayed. A lot of Germans were glad the war was finished, and they trusted the Americans and the English implicitly, not to treat the civilian population badly.
But not so the Russians?
No, everybody from the East left.
So you're with your mum. The rest of your family and friends and so on, you haven't got a clue where they are.
No.
And there comes another remarkable part of the story. You decided to do something about that, didn't you?
Well, I found my father in Hamburg. I was going to see the Red Cross there and register with them. That's what we were asked to do. And they would try and find the people for you. And it was an absolute miracle. I found my father in Hamburg sitting in the road. Just like that.
Really?
I did, but I went to Red Cross queuing up there.
There was your dad?
Yes, there was my father. That was a miracle.
Tell me about that moment. That moment when you saw your father. You didn't know he was alive.
No.
Many hundreds of miles away from where you set out and so on. In the road, I mean, good heavens, how did you react to
that? Well, there was a very long queue, actually. People used to queue up for the Red Cross day and night, because otherwise you lost your spot and then you would have to start again. And they even slept there at night. And I walked along this queue to gradually get to the end. And there was an old man sitting by the side of the road, and he started to touch my skirt. And he said to me, "Do you know, I had a daughter like that once." And there was a woman next to him, and she said, "Granddad, look, don't touch her. You've done that with other girls, you know. You lost your daughter." But he kept on pulling. I thought, I know that voice. But anyway, it was my father.
My guest is Helga Gerhardy. I find this a very moving evening tonight. We are live in the Late Show studio with this remarkable lady. We've only got time to just skip over the brief outline of a remarkable book. Helga, could I ask you this finally? Has writing the book, you never talked about any of this to your sons and to your husband, has writing it helped?
Well, it has, because, you see, even now I've talked to you about it.
You couldn't have done that a few years ago.
No. I told you that it was cold, you know, and when we crossed the ice and so on. I never even mentioned that before. Now I can talk about that. Some of the parts I still don't like to talk about, but I could possibly. But now, yes, it has helped me. And I think also that people ought to know what had happened in the East. Very few people know, because not enough has been told.
I have yet even to mention the fact that you found your dad in Hamburg, and then you set off travelling south on a broken bicycle to reunite your family, which you did, and all that is in the book too. Helga is a remarkable lady, a 69-year-old grandmother. Yes?
Yes.
You don't look it. I have to congratulate you on the book and say thank you for your company this evening. I believe there is to be a second volume, isn't there?
Well, yes, if I have time. At the moment, I think I sort of concentrate still on the first one a little bit, you know, having this interview and talking about it. Mm. But yes, there will be a second book.
You told me that one of your greatest thrills since the book was published was to see it alongside, in the bookshop window, alongside Mrs. Thatcher's book.
Yes, that was in one of W.H. Smith's shops, and my husband went and took a photograph of it.
Have you, finally, before we have to, sadly, we have to go to sports news, Olga, but before you go, do you ever go back?
No, I haven't been back, but I had a school friend who went back to Königsberg and took a video, and that was shocking. I don't want to go back. I want to remember the town the way I left it, and it's part of my childhood. Mm. I don't want that spoiled, that picture, so I won't go back.
Well, a lady who by accident met Hitler walked for 350 miles over some of the most dreadful, in the most dreadful conditions, spent time on a bike cycling across Europe to reunite her family. I have to ask you, I must ask you this, so forgive me, but when you see refugees today, that word refugee sort of rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? We've seen in the former Yugoslavia now. Tell me how that, what does it feel like to be a refugee?
I think back of my own time, and I feel very sorry for the people, and I do hope that eventually they find a place where they can be happy and settle down the way I have done.
Mm. Well, Helga, the story of Helga Gerhardy is a remarkable book by a remarkable lady. Helga, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Bob.
It's the Bob Roberts Late Show.
Across the North, BBC North FM.
And Helga is published right now.